Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello.
And our other co-host, who's always the co-host and will never not be the co-host, Mr. Bryce Castillo.
That's me, Bryce, the third man on this show, Castillo. Hi, everybody.
That's right. Third man.
The third wheel, they call me.
Yeah. But if it's a tricycle or a big wheel, it's kind of a critical wheel.
They call me Trike for short.
That's right. Trike Castillo. Yeah.
Trike Castillo. Hey,
Tricast on Twitter.
I missed that, but that's okay. Remember last week I talked about, hey, you know, there's this cool thing about like just, you know, China, like audio and downloading and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
the education podcasting subscription model from last week. Yeah.
Or just standalone buy individual episodes of a thing. Just buy a thing. Just sell an individual episode kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So after the podcast, I'm like, this is a cool idea. Hmm. Maybe start coding. Yeah. So I started coding and started working and said, how much work can I get done in a week?
Well, it's been a week. How much work can you get done?
If I'm any judge of Andrew Main's skills, I would say very little work can get done in a week on anything.
Hey, I thought the other
So I decided
judge.
To think about it some more. How's the project going? Oh, I started to think some more. I love it be like, I did some thinking, like, so you did nothing.
It's like, hey, man, look, I just want to make sure when I do this, I do it right. I just, you know, it's I'm figuring stuff out. Oh, man, hopefully, maybe.
So I built a basic function version. So what this does is right now is that you can go in, create an account, upload an audio file and a cover art image of whatever you want it is that you want to, you know, make available, put into some data about this. You enter in, I connect it to Stripe. So if you're a creator, you go connect through Stripe, does the round trip, authenticates you on Stripe, adds your Stripe credentials to there. So all of a sudden, you know, you get paid a commission every time somebody purchases it. A regular person can go in there, can go buy an item, and then they get the download page, they get an email notification, this is the thing you bought, whatever. And I'll talk to you offline. I've added a kind of a really kind of nifty feature that I want to all say when we get closer to this that I think is kind of one of the killer ways that this thing makes it useful. But I've got it that far. Now what I've been doing is I've been spending the last day building a server that will take the audio files when you upload them and automatically add cover art to each individual episode. Like if you're going to do a standalone episode, to add the cover art to it. And then, so if you download as an audiobook, it has the cover art, and then also just take that one file and make it an audiobook format and all that. So I could have it, leave it on the end user, the creator, to say, hey, you got to go do these things. But I'm like, I'd rather just do it on my end, figure out how to make it just as painless as possible.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the, we've talked about this before. Some friends of mine wrote a book titled Be Like Amazon. One of the way they graphically depicted things is like, look, in these gears, no matter what the content or the merchandise or the whatever engine is, there will be some amount of friction. What Amazon figured out how to do is to take on the maximum amount of friction so that the owner of the author of the thing experience no friction, and the purchaser of the thing experiences no friction. Now that means that friction doesn't vanish. Thermodynamics, man, that friction is still there. But they took on the responsibility of all of that friction and made it feel like a seamless experience on both parties. And that's why Jeff Bezos is now the richest man on the planet.
Yeah. So that's what I've been doing, is trying to, one, from a buyer point of view, somebody wants to buy the content. I use Stripe integration. It's seamless. You know, Stripe works, whatever. And I did some cool things. Like if you go to buy something and let's say you don't have an account, you still get access to it. Mm-hmm. If you have an account, it's all in your library. If you buy it without your account, but then you log in, it's still there.
Tie it to your library.
Yeah. And then there's some, again, I'll tell you offline about kind of a cool thing I told Justin. Like, yeah, it'd be really cool if we could do this. I said, oh, that'd be great. I'm like, all right. I think I can do it. And then I figured out how to do it. And nobody I know is doing this thing, and I want to do a couple things that sort of surprise and delight people by ease of use. On the creator end, now I'm working on, I can individually process files and do the things I mentioned for this. I'm trying to build a platform that just a server that handles, because I've got to do some stuff in like FFmpeg and tagging and stuff like this. And
does this also have a player? I'm assuming it has a player attached to it.
So this is what's going to be nice about this, is that it is agnostic. I mean, I guess I'll tell you, the killer feature is going to be is you, when you create an account, you put one feed into your podcast feed, and every new item you buy goes into that one feed.
Oh, that's clever.
So you don't have to download anything. You just you buy it, and then boom, it pops up, and it's ready. You can download it as an audiobook.
So essentially, it's like a wrapper, as if I'm subscribing to one podcast, only that podcast is titled All the Things Brian Wish He Knew More About the Podcast Feed. And depending on the price per unit and the type of content that's being shared or whatever, all I know is that when I have either 10, 15, 25, 50 minutes or whatever, I can jump in and get these knowledge upgrades. Sort of like I do the Headspace, new packs show up or whatever, but that's all in that one app. So this is already in whatever my ecosystem is that I'm already comfortable being in. That's fascinating. That's fascinating.
It's a good idea.
The idea is to get away from making you have to have an app. I could build an app for this, but it's like, why not play nice with people already using podcast players, or they're using audio players on their Android, whatever, to play audiobooks. So I figured out how to create the formats for all that. That's part of the reason why I was doing each individual file has its own artwork. So when you open up your player, I've been testing this, and it's funny because I'll add one, I'll forget about it, and my phone will go, oh, you've got a new episode of this thing. And I'm like, oh, wow, there's the latest one I made and tested. And it just showed up because I plugged it into my podcast feed on here.
And that's really smart to lean on the player functionality of podcast players, because those are already rather media rich protocols, right? Like, they are used to having album art and metadata information, even if the audio file doesn't. Like, I think a lot of the stuff we send out doesn't have any metadata stuff to it, but because the podcast apps all fill all that stuff in this other way, that means we can still have show notes. That means that they can they can view show notes, and they can tell where timestamps are.
So
you can have chapters. Those are more of a file metadata thing, but you can have chapters as an integrated function of most players. So you're leaning on an existing platform, an existing library.
The idea that you already have a podcast player, or you already have a thing that plays audiobooks. That's my goal. I wanted to make it just, and now again, there's no copy protection on it. But again, copy protection's a laughable lie anyways now.
Right.
And I have, ways to meter how many times this particular episode has been downloaded, whatever. My goal is to say, how would I want to use this? If I go I bought this, now what do I do with this file? And a lot of the friction part is, one, the easiest way is if I'm a person that can say, oh, it's an MB4A file, it's an audiobook, and iTunes knows this, or it's a podcast. I know how to listen to, most people know how to listen to podcasts now. Mm-hmm. So it's like,
so here's an interesting question I want to throw your way, that right now you're in the nuts and bolts and figuring out what you could do to set up a framework for all of this. And so maybe I'm putting the cart way, way before the horse, but I know as a consumer that I will open up my podcast app and look at it like a menu. And I will think to myself, not you today. Oh, yeah, you with that voice and that thing. It's highly heterogeneous. And there are times that I'm in the mood for what I want is something that I'm going to learn, but it's not going to take too much for me. Or other times it's like, oh, I just want to hear somebody go be angry and upset, or I want to hear essentially a ghost story or a comedy show or whatever. If this is all feeding into one podcast feed, it seems like if it's one unified ecosystem, it needs to have, I say needs, this is me speculating, so I don't know. It might sound like I think I have an answer to this, but I don't. How important do you think it is that all of the episodes have a consistent voice intro sound format for the album art or whatever. Like, because if it all goes into one podcast feed, I guess really you go into that podcast feed and you scroll through episodes and you go through the same heterogeneous experience as you do in the outside for free world, right?
In my imagine how this works is you hear, you know, Justin's got a great new thing on Kickstarter, how to do a Kickstarter. And you go to the site and you buy this thing. And now you know, where does this thing go? Like, well, I got a page. I can just download it, right click to download. But you're also like, oh, yeah, it'll be in my podcast feed under whatever this is called.
So I'm using the wrong metaphor. Even though it's in a podcast feed, I shouldn't think of it as a podcast. I should be thinking about it
you're
about
buying
like your Audible collection.
Delivery.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yep. Nope. That makes sense.
Though, like, one of the things that we talked about and one of the things in the article that we talked about last week was that people would also subscribe on an ongoing basis, on a monetary ongoing basis. Is that
so
roadmap?
If we do that, like what I would do, if we're going to do like it's going to be, you know, a model where you can a paid feed subscription, I would carve that out and say, here's the feed just for that. You could have a one uni feed, everything goes into, or here's a feed for just Brian's content. I think absolutely that justifies, if it's just a one-off, it doesn't justify an RSS feed for it because it's like, well, I don't know. But if I know I have an account and every time I buy something, I know it goes into, you know, the whatever this is called. One thing, but I think, yeah, if we're going to have different shows and different stuff, then I create different feeds for that. Totally.
Okay, cool. Very smart. Because that's that could be that would be a jumble otherwise, right? Like if you have a show that comes out every week or every month or whatever, and then you have these one-off purchases. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, no, I think for subscription stuff, we could do one-off, but I think that's a space we can get into. But right now, I'm like, focus on the one-off standalone because there's not a really good platform for that. And then we could talk about like, what services could be offered in the subscription space that aren't there now? I mean, what is there an option? I think Patreon's neat, but I think there's a lot of space out there for things that it doesn't do.
There are a number of extra hoops you have to jump through to do anything on Patreon, both from the consumer and on the producer side. Whereas if you could collapse that, remember, like we were just talking about, like remove that friction, figure out a way to absorb all that friction, make it super simple to just like click and go. I almost wonder if baked into, and this would be a really radical idea, is everybody gets the ability to share their RSS feed or...
I mean, they would unless they're private feeds.
Well, everybody has a private feed, but like maybe bake into the licensing the ability to share it with 1, 2, 3. You know, like for example, on iTunes, you're able to share, you know, have 5 computers all access the same thing of music. Huh? With Audible, you can lend your books to other people and draw them into the ecosystem.
But then that's DRM and... If there's a point of this where there's a plain text feed or RSS link.
Right. Well, and I don't know. Well, hey, man, I have questions, not answers. Like,
So I think that, yes, I think because like what I can put a cap on the number of times you can download an episode. I can say after this period of time, you can't keep downloading this. But I like the idea of shareability is something I like and say that, hey, you're getting a 5 device license with this. Which means if you want to give your friend this feed, that's totally fine. My girlfriend and I share an audiobook account, right? Audio. And I think the advantage of that is this. If I'm Joe Creator, I'm like, wow, I want everybody to pay for it. Like, yeah, but if you share your feed with Brian, okay, don't look at it like you're losing a sale because Brian's not going to buy everything you know, Bryce buys. What will happen is now if the two of them like it and they talk about it, they'll talk about it to their friends. And you're gonna it's a limited, it's not like we'll share it to everywhere and you'll never see money, which was the problem. It's like 2 or 3 people who know each other talking about it. It's better than 2 or 3 strangers.
And you can also say, whatever that number is, let's say it's X, like you're welcome to share your feed with on X number of devices or X number of people, do whatever, you know? And then let's say somebody all of a sudden like just spikes, you know, the threshold is they're seeing 1,000 downloads a day or whatever. Then at that point, you go to the one person to whom the feed belongs and just say, hey, just FYI, it looks like something spun out of control. Here's your new feed. Update that feed and you're good. Or maybe it's like, it's been 6 months. Here's your new feed, or it's a new year, or you resubscribe for whatever time. Here's your new feed.
And
I can put a limiter. Like if more than five devices access it in a day, you know, something reasonable, like 10 in a day or something go like a regular, you don't want somebody who says, I tried it on my phone and my wife's phone and this, and I had a problem. You don't want them getting shut out. Cause that sucks. That's why we hated DRM. And that what was reasonable to them, they couldn't figure out how many times you had situations where, like, it didn't work on this computer. I went over there, like, oh, you're trying to download. No, literally the download failed over here because there's some problem on your end. So you want to give people enough comfort, but also you want creators to know that, like, you know, somebody goes on some other popular podcast, like, hey, yeah, no, just use my feed. And then you're like, wow, you know, like, because that's...
And weirdly, that's one of the things that's nice about an RSS feed is that it's very hard to say that out loud, you know, like you're not going to say, you know, beep, 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 boop, boop, number, symbol, whatever. That's my feed. And if you are going to use a, let's say, a Bitly shortener to give that out, well, then that's a deliberate act of piracy, in which case, you know, nobody's going to blame the creators or the platform for saying, well, that's a dead feed now, you know? That's really interesting.
I think you could do all of this for sure. I also think that unless you start like tagging files with user account IDs or something, like, you know, there are RSS feeds. People, like, once the files are out there, you can download them very easily and share them sans RSS feed. Like,
sure, but that's already the case for everything, right?
What I'm saying is, like, I don't know that you can't solve that. I don't know that you can solve it. I think it might not be worth.
I think you can, in that you make the easiest of all solutions, the one that is to the benefit of the creator, that within the terms of service of the platform. I mean, we've talked about it before. Convenience trumps fidelity. Once it's easier to just buy everything on Amazon, and somebody has the economic means to do so, they tend to do that. You know, once it's easier to just get a subscription.
But if we're talking about piracy, those people already don't care about convenience.
Well, correct. We're not concerned in this hypothetical.
We're not going to solve privacy. What I don't want is somebody to take that RSS feed and post it to iTunes as, hey, great inspirations thing. And then I see thousands of downloads and I'm like, what is this? Oh, because somebody just literally took the RSS feed I gave them. That's why I can put limiters on the amount of downloads from each feed, or even to, there's things like this. But yeah, we're not going to solve piracy. That's the goal, is to just make sure this really easy, convenient thing that I'm doing for consumers doesn't get exploited by bad actors. That's the goal.
Or make it just the easiest way to be the one that's in accordance with the plan.
Yeah, you know, we'll figure. I mean, it'll be an ongoing thing. And I mean, all of your input is super, super helpful, because it's like, I can have an idea in my head of how this is going to work, but then the reality is, you know, different. But that's the track. So that's my goal for the next few days, is to work on the server, which handles the processing of these files, simplifies this. I've got an idea too, how to simplify artwork creation. And I want to solve all the creator problems to make it very easy and effortless, that you can focus on the quality of the episode and not worry about all the metadata and all that other stuff.
Can I throw you just a completely wild ass idea that would, because we talk about reducing friction. I think we've talked a lot about looking at it from the consumer side. Let's accept as a postulate that there's a lot of really talented people who have important things to share with the world, who have not yet shared it, and whether it's because they lack a financial incentive or comfort with the technical skill set of what it takes to put something out there. I could imagine, what if somebody was making these modules and didn't? So it's going to sound like I'm trying to pull a trick, but it's not meant to be a trick. But let's say you pulled a trick to all of every community, or every town has a clinical hypnotherapist who teaches people to stop smoking. These mid-level professionals with masonry experts, construction engineers, whatever. What if you went to them You didn't even have to go to them. What if you said, hey, this is a 20-step program, and now you've written a book, and here's how you do it. You'll get paid the entire way through. So you have, let's say, 1,000 customers at whatever your practice is. Let's say it's hypnotherapy, quit smoking. You've learned some number of things. Here's the plan. You're going to make 20 content modules in general. The first 5 should have to do with this in general. Let's talk about the challenges. Let's talk. Come up with a few stories of things you overcame, blank, blank. The second 5, third 5, fourth 5. And then it's like you're going to start recording these 20-minute modules. Here's some advice on making them good. And then as you go, you're going to be able to release them. Your customers can get them. You buy them. By the time you hit 20, we will send you a file that has everything transcribed, and now it's in print format. And if you want to edit it yourself, because now you have a 60,000-word book that you've written, positioning you as the expert in whatever the thing you're an expert in. If you want, you can edit it yourself and publish through all the publishing means. Or here's this other thing over here where, you know, for a percentage of sales or whatever, we'll chop it up. And guess what? You've now written a book. You've now done a thing. And the whole way it feels like you're eating that elephant one bite at a time and don't even realizing it. You do each 20-minute module for the purpose of having a $1 or $2 or $5 download. But by the end of it, all of a sudden, you now have something that grants you authority, if not actual authority, then you know what we perceive as authority, having written a book on it.
I think that's a model of work. I'm excited about the idea of the role of the producer being somebody who can say, hey, what I do is I go find interesting professions and I produce these 2-hour-long episodes. I'm going to do a 2-hour interview with, a couple hypnotherapists and how they can help other people. I'm going to sell this as standalone. I know nothing about it. And then next week, I'm going to go do some interviews with some cops and talk about policing and blah, 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 or detectives, like what that's like. Week after, I'm going to go do one on plumbing repair you could, as a producer, the cool thing is the idea is you could say, hey, it's a new platform in which you can create people who do nonfiction content, like specialized sort of stuff on that. And that's the exciting thing to me is that for somebody who says, there are a lot of people have this knowledge, but they're even, no matter how easy we make the platform, even having a microphone and just saying, just do this, will still be a step too far. But if somebody says, hey, let's do a Skype interview, and then I can build into this, I built already into the system. Hey, I'll give you, 20% of whatever this makes automatically, and that's in the system. So if I interview you and I say, hey, you'll get 20% of every time the transaction is made.
It's pretty good. Because then all of a sudden you begin to identify the same structure that works on a nonfiction book about, real life experience from a cop on keeping your kids safe will, in general, you'll be able to, match the broad strokes, the same thing on quitting smoking or on acupuncture whatever it is the various people are experts in. You could tease out those structural elements in there.
You gotta be like, I'm gonna do a deep dive interview with, people who worked on sci-fi shows, or something. But that's part of what I'm trying to do is there's the friction part and then the incentivization part is to say, how do I incentivize somebody to go create content who goes I've seen how it works with ebooks and seeing ebook, you understand, I write an ebook and then I sell the ebook and the ebook's available on this platform. I think with audio, I think we're on the verge of Audible's huge, but I think we're on the verge of this. Hey, I'm a person that produces audio content that's for sale on specific topics and stuff because, once the thing works, it sells itself despite the platform. But I think that becomes a new role. I think it becomes a new thing that somebody can do versus because podcasting, we tell people do it for a bunch of years, build an audience, and then try to do a Patreon. Where here it could be if you have a great idea, produce a couple of these as standalones, make free, get it out there, but have push, promote.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. No. And then we get back to that. And we've talked about this on the show before. It's that whole, use a platform to build your own platform. And then other people use your platform to build their platform and so on.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. Yeah. Congrats. I'm glad to hear that you've made progress.
Yeah.
in astonishing Andrew Main time.
Well, next, I mean, now, but it's obviously, it's one of these things where you like to go, hey, the thing is done and it's ready. But it's like, no, you've got to, you know, it's the friction. It's just because you make a thing like, oh, you, there's a point at which you go like, all right, I'm adding too many features, but, you know, reducing friction is not a feature. Reducing friction is a goal. So that's the goal I'm trying to do right now, is just to make it, hey, I recorded this. What do I do now? Just upload it and, you know, now we'll take care of the rest and get rid of the things that are frustrating when I try to do that elsewhere. So I have an idea for, I found a domain name I like, but it's like $4,000.
Oh.
So I'm in that sort of, you know, mode going.
I mean, I'm willing to sell. I could tell you like it a lot. You're talking about boobjobdisasters.pizza?
Well, you know, I think it's got all of the right keywords.
That's what people do, is they really get their keywords from the top level domain.
Yeah. So anyhow, that's the step where I'm like, well, I don't think this name's going to get bought immediately.
I did have one of those moments 2 weeks ago. There's a certain name that Bryce and I have been talking about a lot, and I realized I hadn't bought the domain.
Oh, Jesus.
I paid a.
Did you get it?
Yeah, I did. Okay. But it's the first time I've ever paid more than, you know, $15 for a domain. Uh-huh. But it was only $350.
That's not too bad.
Super worth it, right?
Yeah. I've paid a couple thousand for them once before.
Yeah. Oh, you have?
That's a fine price.
Okay.
It's a couple $100.
But still, that was a weird, like, we all have these blind spots, and for whatever reason, just never occurred to me. And suddenly I was like,
well, yeah.
There was definitely a day, we won't say the name at all, but there was definitely a day where I was like, oh, I don't know if Brian's Googled this name. What if there's someone else is using it? Thankfully not.
Oh, it's mostly a bunch of articles. I had Googled it, and so I knew it looked to be a fairly wide open name. Space. Yeah.
Anyway.
But I realized, like, in casual conversation, I had been speculating about it. Yeah. And then I realized, now that I've decided, I need to, let's just secure bleep, blah, bloop.
Yep. Oh, bleep, blah, bloop. Got it. whenever I go pitch a TV show, I go get the domain first.
Yep.
You know, because you want to make sure that, you know, if they love it, that you don't, if, because one, you know, stuff does get stolen, but it's not so much that. It's just that all of a sudden, like, oh, yeah, we've gone, the show's in development, and we own the domain name for that. You're like, oh, I never get that back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's a thing, a consideration there. Let's go to a question, and this is a very, very good one. So, yeah, this is from our good friend Ken Pelioshock, who says, I'm a full-time programmer, part-time stand-up comic. I recently wrote a sitcom pitch with a pilot script for a joint CBC Just for Laughs contest. I didn't win, but I knew the odds were against me. Or the odds. Anyway, I think the script is good, though I realize the world is full of people who think their script is good. Thought I might shop it to other Canadian networks or streaming services, but I don't have an agent and believe that would help. I'm subscribed to a newsletter casting call email for an agent who sells this one-day workshop. See itinerary below. This is from July, right? it's expensive enough that it'll be difficult to convince the wife. Should I go, or am I throwing money at a quasi-scam? Bryce, you could have saved this guy. I've bolded the elements that interest me most. So, one, script deliveries, privately a one-on-one with, catered lunch, finding an agent, social media branding yourself. Okay, I looked this up. First off, Ken, from everything I understand, I'm assuming this is the same person that I Googled that does Canadian, does the same list of things. This is a workshop for how to be a TV host. When they say script deliveries, it literally means I'm reading a script. This is how I'm going to deliver the script and present the script, not actually like pitching you know, network scripts, stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think that then the price that I saw was like $250. If you were interested in being a host, I don't think those are the worst things. I don't think it's the worst thing to do some, because sometimes some of these things can be very scammy. And the fourth question for after things, never paying an agent before getting work. You're not paying an agent. You're paying somebody to tell you how the business works. Paying an agent means I'm going to pay you to represent me. And that's just BS. That's not the way that it's done. That's complete. If somebody agent says I'll represent you, but it's going to cost a manager or anybody, that is a scam. Run away, run away, run away. Here, if you're going to a seminar, one day thing, and it's this. One, try to find out if other people have reviews of it, what they've thought of it. But I found that I've gone to a couple of these years ago when I knew nothing about the business, and spending $250 US or Canadian just to be in the room and listen to somebody who's at least been notionally in the business wasn't the worst thing in the world. Couple $100. When you start getting into thousands of dollars, totally outrageous, not worth it, BS, don't even go there. A couple $100 if you wanted to be a TV host or find out about it, not bad. I've spent, for on-air hosting stuff, I spent tens of thousands of dollars on coaching and stuff like this, you know, when I had a show. So, and that paid off and that helped tremendously. For this, if you want to do that, but that's not what you want to do. He wants to submit scripts.
Yeah.
So my suggestion is, if you want to submit scripts and you don't have an agent, the way you can kind of do this, one of the ways you go do this, and the way, and here is the shortcut into the business. This is the shortcut. This is how Brian does it, how I do it, this is how we do it, this is the way it works. We almost never go to a network directly. We never have, hey, I have an idea, I'm going to go to a network. I've pitched networks directly. But really, the way things most momentum happens is you go to a producer who has a relationship with the network. Okay. Producers are extremely approachable because networks are in the business of buying, which means that they get to say no to a lot of things. Producers are in the business of selling, which means that they need lots of product to try to sell. So their doors are always open for people who say, hey, I've got an idea for this. I would try to find, you know, what are some production companies around there that are working, that are selling television content, and you will find out that every one of them has a development exec, has groups of development execs, and their job is to take pitches. It's sort of networks, but networks are very discriminating who they listen to. Go to a producer.
Yeah, I think you and I might have different tolerances for how much to pay for business classes, specifically because it depends on whether if you're paying for access and you think that somebody is going to, you know, save the day and open up the door to a brand new world, then no, I agree. The threshold is a few hundred dollars. But if you're looking, there have definitely been multi-day courses that I've taken that have been in the thousands of dollars that I regard as possibly one of the best investments I've ever made in my entire life. You know?
Oh no, I'm yes, and what I'm saying is, like, if it's a 3-day, the business of this and it's entertainment, that sounds legit. If it's one of these things, a couple thousand dollars to meet with this person because they promise to help you get connections. Yeah, Brian is agreeing with me. Yes, the podcast. Like, yeah, that's me. But yeah, there are multi-day, several thousand dollar courses. Absolutely worth it. In entertainment, the danger is there's so many predators out there that are willing, because you have a dream. I have a dream, and I don't know how this business works, but this guy says he'll tell me how the business works, and now I'm going to pay, and then nothing. And then there has been some lawsuits and stuff, actually some criminal cases in you know, California over casting directors who'd worked on casting for some shows were then, you know, doing these casting seminars, and the promise was sort of implied that, like, or not implied, just directly said, like, oh yeah, you want to go on CSI, pay $5,000 on my casting session.
So in this case, I would say that I think a good distinguishing factor is if what you truly crave is, if what you have is a hunger for the knowledge, and if you think, if all I do is learn for 2 days, and this is that worth $2,000? And the answer is yes, then by all means, you know, then, you know, in that case, almost certainly, if you're unhappy with it, you know, oftentimes they'll refund your money or whatever like that. But if what you want is the thing being to appear on the show, to get a script in the hands of whoever, to the benefit that comes from the knowledge, then almost always it seems like that's a scam. Would you say that's a fair way to put it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, if Brian Brushwood offered a course and said, hey, for $1,000, you know, you and four other people come to Texas, we're going to spend 2 days, show you our studios, talk about podcasting. I'm going to tell you everything I know. It's going to be an intensive thing about how we got started, the technical side, the promotional side, whatever like this. You know, $1,000 to go learn this. I'd be like, man, I want a time machine to go back. I'd be like, in a heartbeat. Brian Brushwood said, hey, for $1,000, I'm going to make you a podcast star. He'd be like,
hey, man,
you know, I'll give you a guest spot on one of my podcasts. I'll do this, this, this. It's like he's making a promise he can't deliver on.
Right.
Shame on you, Brian. Shame. How dare you?
Hey, I think we're going to have to do something a little bit slippery. I'm going to duck out just long enough to go pick up my daughter from the school bus, but I'll come back in time for us to talk picks, if that's okay with you guys.
Yeah, totally, totally, totally cool.
Okay, all right, BRB. Oh,
okay.
I'll Bryce, jump in wherever you want. But
me and my vast Hollywood entertainment experience.
Yeah, well... More than you realize. More than, and one of the things too is that you start accumulating experience, and then, you know, and so I had a call this, you know, I'm the Mr. Hollywood here. So I had a call this morning with my agent, who's like, "Oh, this major top three studio is says, oh yeah, they're going to renew the thing on this." I'm like, "Okay, all right, it means we won't put a ticket elsewhere, but it's cool because, you know, they have to pay for the renewal and the option on that." I'm like, yeah. "Okay, cool." And she's, you know, it's like, "Yeah, they're going to get in the minutia of this and little gossipy thing like this," and then I hang out. But I'm like, 7 years ago, you know, to tell myself that, you know, that would be a typical, I know Monday mornings usually when she and I catch up, I'm like, if I told myself, yeah, every Monday morning, you're going to probably hear, you know, you're going to have a conversation with your agent, and this, you know, you're going to be a typical, like the least important news of the day is, oh yeah, the studio just renewed this thing, whatever.
Yeah.
And it's, you have your first moment where all of a sudden Hollywood reaches out to you, which, you know, happened with one of my books, you know, it's like, I'm a producer who's done so and so. And often it's a peripheral, you know, it's a producer not attached to anything, but it's still like, oh wow, they're in LA and it's a producer. Mm-hmm. And then next thing you know, you find yourself sitting across the table from a famous director and talking about stuff. And you're like, how did this happen? And I wasn't an insider. I didn't know anybody, you know,
yeah.
It was driven, and then you're there, but then you take for granted, and there are all these things that you know. And I would talk to people. They'd be like, oh, you know, so-and-so got this. And they're like, oh, that's so naive. I'm like, maybe, but you didn't know. And you don't know if you're middle of nowhere and you want to create content and stuff.
And that is not just for the entertainment business. It's for any skill, mm-hmm. any skill at all, where over time, your own experiences will build up quietly, and after, you know, X amount of years doing, you know, this field of work, you can look back and say, oh, I have some authority over this. I have some amount of expertise, and it is like a shocking sort of thing. There, I don't remember the exact situation, but I've had a similar thing recently where I was like, oh no, I kind of have expertise on video making, on video production, and, mm-hmm. and video post production, editing, and it's always humbling to me to be like, oh yeah, I've definitely come a long way in, you know, the 4 years I've been here in Austin.
You know, I'm a guy that feels very much like an outsider on certain things, but then I realize how much it is to take for granted. And that's when you get questions from people like, hey, how do I go about doing this? And you're like, oh, it's naive. But then, like, I talk to people in the business who sort of like, I'm like, you think that's really how it worked? I'm like, that ain't the case. Right. So think if you want to get into, when I wanted to do magic on television, I knew my goal was to go work with production companies, producers who produce stuff, and go find production companies that created content for where I wanted to go. And the mistake I hear people have made, like, oh, these producers want to make my, you know, thing into a movie. Like, that's great. Who are they? Mm-hmm. Oh, they did this. What have they done? Like, I don't know. And you look up there and you be like, these guys, like, this guy was like, you know, a craft services guy on this TV show. Like, that's, and he got that job because his brother did it. Like, not to say that they can't be producers. They're not mm-hmm. what it means to be a producer, but I'm saying, like, be careful about, don't get too excited if they're, just because they say they're producers, they're into it or whatever.
Or be conscious of what you give up in a situation like that, right?
Yeah.
If you are talking to someone who is not a proven talent, well, you'd better have a significant amount of ownership still in whatever you're handing over to them, regardless of how it turns out, because you are taking such a gamble in an already risky business, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, I've had friends got excited, like, oh, I just, you know, so-and-so, they want to make this. And like, what do? They did this show. I'm like, that show was 25 years ago.
Right.
Like, I mean, you know, just so you know, Hollywood's not knocking on their door excited to hear what their next project is because it's a quarter century ago. Not to say that that doesn't happen, but you got to be mindful. But my advice, like, to Ken is just that, hey, you have a script, you want to do this. What I would do is, you know, find out, like, you know, who are some producers that produce the kind of content you're into, reach out to them and talk to them. Because, again, it's not as scripted is hard. Also, keep submitting, like, if you can put that script into other film festivals, other places, mm-hmm. if you can get some awards for it, it really doesn't mean that much. Like in LA, it's funny because it's like, you know, like, you know, everybody won some award somewhere. Everybody came from somewhere. Everybody yeah. came from something.
And, there are enough awards out there where you can find some little fig leaf to put on your.
Yeah. And it doesn't. Yeah, exactly. And after a point, it doesn't matter. Nobody cares. They just assume, you know, like, you know, and that's the funny thing, too. It's like, you know, what's a big deal if you're in a middle, small town somewhere, like, oh, so-and-so was on this TV show. It's like, mm-hmm. yeah, that waitress, she did 5 seasons of the show you know about, and she's now a waitress. Like, that's this town, yeah. you know?
Yeah.
So.
And thanks. Another thing I would check, Ken, and I'm assuming that you are at this point of emailing us about this, that you are aware, but, like, you know, he mentioned that he wrote this pitch for a CBC Just for Laughs contest. I would make sure you check the fine print of that contest and make sure you own that script. You know, I think there's a very good chance you do, but any time that there are big contests and things, there's a chance that by submitting something, you are giving over your rights or giving some amount of ownership to that.
My opinion is, like, just assume you do, because unless they compensated you for it, I'm not sure about Canadian law. Like, let them come at you, bro, if you sell it somewhere.
I'm just saying, maybe take a once over.
Yeah, take a look. Make sure. And then ignore what they say. Because I don't think that wouldn't hold up here, but I know how Canadian law works.
Because I know I feel like I've read horror stories about that Shark Tank show where people will have to give up something to be on that show, whether or not they make a deal.
Yeah, but that's the difference, is you're compensated or there's something in place for there. You're getting an appearance fee or there's something in there, I think. I don't know the specifics of that, but
yeah.
Because their Shark Tank looks at it like just the mere fact that you're appearing on their show counts as promotion.
The exposure,
whatever. But yeah. We'll see. Like, there have been, you know, that gets to be, you know, again, not a copyright law expert. No. So, you know, I my favorite story is, and actually this is the same, now that I think about it, the same studio that just is reopening an option on something of mine. They'd optioned something before.
Okay.
And the contract took forever. I got paid and I got the contract after the option expired. I'm like, so I don't have to sign this, do I?
Yeah, this is just a waste of time.
At least they paid me on time, so that was, you know, working with the agents.
That's sure the that important happens. Thing. Make sure you get paid, kids.
Yeah, that's like this town. Like, I have a friend that she was an assistant at a famous producer's office, and she's going through the desk. And this producer is working for a writer, a famous writer, and finds a check for like $1 million from a studio to the writer, and had been sitting there like for 5 months.
Holy
like,
cow!
Is this important? They're like, oh yeah, this was the option for this. And I'm like, to live in a world where $1 million check gets lost in a drawer and I don't notice it.
It could be expired 5 months. That check might not count.
Well, the studio would still, you know,
yeah. But still, wow. Yeah. Oh, man. Hey, welcome back, Brian.
Dude, that's crazy.
It was a famous person. Did I mention they were famous?
Oh, you know, you didn't mention that they were both famous people.
Capital A, capital F.
Yeah. Oh, but that is the thing where you're on the outside and if you keep pushing, trying to work your way in and being smart and try to figure out your way, you know, there's these moments you find yourself and you're at a hockey game with Grunberg, you know, you're in an awkward situation with somebody who is, you know, your childhood hero, and you know, these things happen and you're like, wow, this is the business. This is what it is.
And something, something maybe a little out of left field compared to everything that we've been talking about, Ken, would be to, like, okay, so you have a script. You have a script. Have you talked to anybody about producing a small part of it, or making a sketch, or like turning that into some low budget thing on?
If I can run with that thread before I hand it over to Andrew, like, very rarely do anybody who belong in that business of writing have only one good idea. And if you fear that that's your one good idea, consider the possibility that you need a little more runway with a few more ideas. I think one of the themes that we keep coming back to in After Things is parallel projects. If you're working on one thing, you should be working on something else. If you belong there, then odds are, you know, they're all lottery tickets. They're all lots and lots and lots of them.
Yeah,
absolutely. And so I would say that, to Bryce's point, if there's something really cool or neat about this idea, if you can find a way to deliver it in a final form that's good, I don't know that there's really a lot of success with doing 10-minute versions or pilots of sitcom stuff like this. People do it all the time here, all the time. And LA, everybody, and they're like, oh, we're doing like a thing like this. I am sure that that has led to something at some point, but I'm not aware of really that ever leading to there being a pattern to that leading to. And then that group of people, they got picked up to go do a thing. What I do know is comedy partners or comedy duos, comedians and stuff who do skits and sketches and stuff. Right. That because they're creating, and this is to Brian's point, they're creating a pile of things that you work that you can see. And that was, go ahead, Bryce.
And that's mostly what I'm trying to say is, if you've got a script here, you've probably got bits that you can chunk up or like you can make something with this before you can make something out of this and still have a script left over,
or you just know? you but what makes you a good writer or comedian, just you doing just things that could be totally irrelevant to this. And right. Brian and I were talking about this before about how, you know, you want to have enough irons in the fire that you don't care. Like, I've gone through this where I've had people really hot on one project, and then all of a sudden something else comes out that's similar, then nobody wants to touch it. And that, you know, that's my lesson, was have four other things I care about. And so, and that's the way I am now. Like, I preemptively, like, I know actually as soon as somebody gets excited about one thing, I jump into a new thing just so that when that thing crashes and burns, that I'm focused on the next thing. I started writing because I was out here doing pilots for TV shows that nobody ever saw. You know, I was doing things that just, it'd be exciting because, like, hey, the network likes you. The network wants to do this. The network's going to pay for a pilot. And I do the pilot. Networks change their mind. And I went through that several times. And I'm like, well, this is the best I could hope for, statistically speaking. It's the odds, you know, it's like 1 out of 7 or something like this. In the meantime, it sucked not having the show, which sucked. Like, what have you been up to? And it's like, well, you know, I got 3 pilots I can't show you. But, you know, I started writing books because with self-publishing, it's like, if I just say screw trying to get it published, you know, through a publisher, do it myself, I can start accumulating work that people could see. And that's now become, you know, I had, you know, I had no idea the amount of growth that was possible there. So.
Yeah. And I think I don't know, the temptation for a lot of people is like, well, I can't just give it away. What do I put it up as a blog post? What do I put it up as a short story? Then the whole world is going to know my idea. And it's like, yeah, that's what you want. You want the whole world to know your idea.
And know that you have good ideas and that you can execute.
Hey, you're that guy that had that really good idea. Do you have any other good ideas? Do you have maybe a system by which you continue to manufacture good ideas?
Yeah. Sometimes there are very magical special gimmicks or things like that you need to be protective of. The number of times somebody has come to me and had that is 0.
Yes.
You know, but there are sometimes a premises or something like this, you know, that the first person to do the Blair Witch kind of thing, like, yeah, that was, you know what? Really, really, really cool kind of premise. They were onto something there. There was the found footage genre sort of existed, but the kind of way to do that there. Every now and then there is a, no, this is special, don't tell it, but the chances are that you or I have that almost more likely 0 than that. And I've had people go like, I have an idea. I want to tell you, but will you sign an NDA? I'm like, 1, I don't care, and 2, no, you know? And the more protective they are, oh, you need to see an NDA like this, the worse, the dumbest the idea usually is. Or you're like, no, these people did exactly this thing and you didn't even know that. And you're expecting people to sign NDA on this when it's already out there. And it's just because they have one idea. They have one idea and they think their idea is super special. So, but yeah.
I guess that's the answer is probably the idea is super special to them because they've never had another idea that they thought was that good. In which case, you should go to work immediately making whatever you think your most super special idea is way less special. All of your ideas should you should have so many of them that whatever one feels special should not feel special.
I have a book idea that I think is super special. I don't know if it's so special now because there have been things that come out that's similar to it, but when I had this thing 20 years ago, you know, it was one of the things I said one day I'd like to write this, and I still think it's a special idea and I haven't put it out there. But sometimes really special ideas have a habit of people like, yeah, it's cool, it's clever. Nobody cares, you know?
Yeah.
But no, it really is as clever as you thought. Just nobody really wanted that clever. Mm-hmm. Waffle Fagus wants us, so what if you have an idea that is good and it is a method to monetize something you are going to be doing anyway?
Hey, you want to sign an NDA before you tell us the idea? Like, that's a little more abstract than I think we can work with in this case.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you're going to be doing it and you can monetize it, go for it. I don't know. It's too broad to say anything else, I think, right?
Yeah. I know enough about what Waffleophagus works on to have a vague idea of the space, but even that, even with insider knowledge, I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, do it. Go and do it.
Yeah, do it. Whatever it is. Just go for it. Go do it, Waffle. Budget accordingly and with your time and your monies.
Yeah.
But feel free to reach out to us at where should people send in their stuff?
Neshcom@gmail.com, subject line after things. And Ken, if you have an update since July, please let us know.
I would love to hear if he went and how good it was and what he got out of it or if he didn't or what.
Don't be afraid to just do stuff. Be bold. You want to do comedy, go do open mic nights. You know, you want to do podcasts, get a microphone to some friends and do some podcasts and do some stuff. You know, I did a deep dive in a bunch of Red Letter Media stuff, you know, like, and it's interesting to watch those guys evolve into what they've done. And you see that. You see that drive to do something. I saw some trailers for some of their early horror movies they made, which we're going to make an awful movie. You did. but you, and the thing you're doing isn't necessarily the thing you'll be doing 5 years from now, but just do stuff. And that's just, man, like, I hate it when I'm like, people are like, I'm thinking about doing this. And like, you told me a year ago, you're thinking about doing this. Like, just make a thing, you know?
Yeah.
But I will say, if what you are truly seeking is knowledge, don't feel bad about paying for knowledge. If you know, don't expect anyone to swing open doors to your, if you think you're buying a shortcut, it's almost certainly a scam. If you think you're buying knowledge, then by all means, pay premium price for knowledge. It's good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And don't be afraid to ask people too. Like there's the funny thing too, is it's like, there is so much knowledge willing to be had for a beer or lunch or whatever. If you just say, hey, I'd like to pick your brain because I'd like to figure this out and whatnot. And that was one of the things I found out. Like once, you know, who works in the business? These people work in the business. Let me go talk to these people in the business. Next thing you know, they're telling me the business and then they're treating me like I'm in the business. And then do you want to do business? And it's like, wow, okay. Mm-hmm. Now that I understand what it is, you know, so cool.
Hey, my pick is the Weird Things podcast. It's a good podcast. You should listen to it.
Okay. I've got a pick. I don't know if this is too much. So I don't know. I've been looking at, I watch a lot of YouTube. I got the YouTube premium and all. And, I
get you money bags.
and I was clicking around and I actually found myself really liking, this channel on YouTube called Tasty. They're a BuzzFeed, brand. They do like, they do recipes, but they also do like shows. So like one of the shows they're doing now is called I Draw You Cook, where they have a kid draw some food thing, something tangentially close to food. And then two Tasty producers will go and like try to make a version of the food. And it's like this is really all of their stuff is really well done. And we were talking a little bit about expertise a few minutes ago, and it's the sort of thing where I see their production values and the different things and decisions that they make, and think about ways that we can do some of the things that they're doing into our production stuff. You know, I think BuzzFeed makes good stuff. I mean, there's a reason BuzzFeed is as big as it is, and I think Tasty capitalizes on their niche really well. So also just like good recipes, whatever. I like to cook. So, Tasty.
Yeah. Get off my back, people.
So my pick, I've been playing with it. I don't know enough to say that, oh, I recommend it. This will solve your problems, whatever. But like, I was like trying to build a server thing for what I've been working on and trying to build different parts of it. One of the many services that Amazon has is LightSail. And, you know, you go to Amazon's AWS console and you see about 5 million different things they can do. And you're like, what is an elastic beanstalk? You know, is it good that it's elastic? You know, you make that face, but so much of what we do is dependent upon elastic beanstalk, Brian. That's the thing. You know, you question this, but there are all these sorts of stuff. And a lot of these are ways in which so much of the way the web works, it's moving to the cloud, and not weird in strange ways. There are things called, like, AWS has their things called Lambda functions, which is if you break apart like a piece of code and it's like, oh, every time, you know, somebody creates a user account, take their avatar and make a circular version of it and then send them an email. There are little functions, right, that you'd have on a server. Amazon's Lambda functions, other people do this too. It's not like Amazon. You can literally just put that function into the cloud. It doesn't sit on a server other than the Amazon cloud, and then you, on your own code, execute it. And so that's one of the crazy things that's happening now with software, is that this little part executes these functions. The database is over here. This is here. It's not like it's sitting. First, we had a server. You know, you had a server, you know, server that would put your everything onto. Then we did virtualization. Well, I can just copy the server over to these other things and spread them out and spread the workload. Now we're getting into this crazy thing where this little function sits over here, gets triggered when this gets emailed over here. So the goal is it can scale. The idea is that all of a sudden, if I get 5 million people hitting my site at once, it scales. And then when I don't have 5 million people, it scales back down, and I only have to pay per usage and stuff. So there's a lot of these solutions which, like, frankly make my head hurt, you know, trying to figure out these things. Somebody points out Amazon Alexa skills are powered by Amazon Lambda functions. Like, yeah, you have this simple sort of bits of code that run there. But LightSail is a thing they have where a lot, if you want to deploy a website like a WordPress site, it's super, super cheap. You can do it directly on Amazon with LightSail. So you can do different kinds of sites. I'm building like a Node.js site. But if you wanted to create a WordPress site, you can launch one for like $3.50 a month.
Wow.
Other people do this too. But the funny thing is they're probably buying their storage space from Amazon.
From AWS.
And so LightSail is a very easy way to deploy a virtual server, whatever, serving, doing certain things. So if you want to create if I were to do my WordPress site again, I'd probably just go directly to LightSail and use their WordPress deployment. Mm-hmm. Because the advantage of it is it's plugged into all the other Amazon services and stuff. It's super easy to scale, things like this. So anyhow, I was just playing LightSail. That was my thing. Interesting.
All right, right on.
That's cool. I'd never heard of that. And you know, I've made some websites in my day, and the price on this is very competitive compared to anything I've looked at, you know, in the past decade or so. Like, this seems reasonable.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's funny because I'll watch a tutorial video and they'll show like, oh, go ahead and create an account here. And you'll see like the $10 level has, you know, 5 terabytes by the time the video comes out. The $10 account has 30 terabytes of storage because storage prices keep falling. And so it's what a world we live in. So anyhow, I don't know. Dig around. If you're technically inclined, start playing around with some of that stuff, seeing what's out there. I didn't know that was an option. I knew LightSail was a thing. I didn't even 2 days ago, I had no idea what LightSail did. And then I'm like, I was trying to build a Lambda function. I need to, you know, install a dependency and blah, blah, blah.
Very cool.
All right. So yeah, it's been after.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.